am Trenton. Oh, well, I'm not Trenton. I'm Beverly Hills. Respect the location when it comes to value. Don't underestimate the value of the location because the street is hot. All right, my friend, this is Ola coming to you live from my Empire Pro Studios. On this video, we're talking about the top 12 mistakes that are made by newbies, rehabbers, real estate investors, fix and flippers, whatever you want to call it. If you're hiring contractors, you're buying a property so you can put in a little bit of value, add some value, and flip it for a profit. This video is absolutely for you because I've really gone in and I'm going to talk about this top 12 mistakes. At first I was going to make it 5, but it was just going to be way too much to squeeze into one video, you know, into one session. It'd be too many mistakes fixed into 3, 4, 5, you know. So it's basically probably better for me to state them out one after the other. There are about 12 of them. I'm going to try to keep them short, but this video is very, very important for you. Each point is very, very important for you. Each one of these mistakes can cost you tens of thousands of dollars depending on what neighborhood you're working in. So the first one is not screening contractors. So what do I mean by not screening contractors? Okay, so basically everyone is going to show up. Everyone is going to basically put on their best foot forward. Put on their best, their Sunday best, put their best foot forward. They're gonna try to give you a first impression, especially if you're brand new in the game, you know. So they can be very sweet, they can be very nice, they can be very empathetic, and you want to make sure that you are not getting emotional, okay? Because at the end of the day, we're all emotional beings and you have to protect yourself, but more importantly, you have to protect your pocket, because you have to protect the business, the venture that you're getting into. You have to protect the profits, and your goal is to maximize profits, okay? So since your goal is to maximize profits, actually that's one of the mistakes that people make. They forget that the goal is to maximize profit. There's a place for charity, there's another place for maximizing profits. In this game, the idea is to maximize profits. So if you stay on that, then you obviously have to protect that. So people are gonna come to the table, contractors are gonna come from left and right, HVAC, plumbing guy, electrical guy, and they're gonna sound very, very nice. And guess what? They are actually very, very nice people, okay? However, they're gonna be positioned in a position where they have no choice but to steal from you. Not because they want to steal from you, because they have been positioned in a place where it's easy for them to steal from you, but to be honest with you, they're stealing from themselves long term too, because if you go out of business, they don't get to get some more jobs from you again. But they're not really thinking that. Again, they're positioned, you've created a system where it's easy for them to steal from you. So that's the first step. Not screening contractors is one of your biggest that you have to bring a lot of contractors on the table, and you have to screen them, and you basically, there's a lot more into that, and we'll get to that in the further part of this of the video here, okay? So first mistake is to think you're gonna first find the first, second, third, and just hire the next person that feels good to you. The wrong thing you want to do is use the feel good part of it. You want to use discrete data as much as possible, but of course you want to be empathetic, you want to be a human being. By the end of the day, that's the more reason why you must protect that profit. All right, so let's go on to this next one. The second one is religionizing textbook strategies. Let's be frank, the truth of the matter is that there's a lot of textbooks out there, there's a lot of books out there. As a matter of fact, I have a book out here, Smart Real Estate Wholesaling, and it's about 350 pages, I think, something like that, right? Yep, 300 plus pages, and there's a ton of information in it. I just wrote another book called Real Estate Money Secrets that'll be out soon, and there's a ton of information in there. A lot of them are my opinion, a lot of them are coming from experience. A lot of these things, I will give you a step-by-step on how to do certain things that we do in real estate. But the worst mistake you can make is to religionize or make any statement that made in those books absolute, because in real life it's never absolute. If it was that simple to just follow things and bring it down to science, everyone would be winning, right? But the the truth of the matter is that everyone is not winning, okay? The truth of the matter is that as much as there's a science to this game, there's a heart to this game, and you have to pay attention to the fact that there's something called street smart. Yes, book smart. Yes, you know the theory. Yes, you know that the after repair value is this, the repair estimate is this, but there's some things that only comes with experience. And you want to pay attention to those. You want to make sure you're not just being anal. You want to make sure that you're not overthinking book strategies. Textbook strategies are exactly that. They're created as a guide. It doesn't mean that everything is going to work along the side like that for you. It also depends on your neighborhood, right? It depends on the people you're working with. Some people are going to give you tips that are completely, you cannot find them. You can't find them in any textbook anywhere. You have to pay attention to those things and see if it makes sense to you. And if it doesn't make sense to you, ask why, ask more questions. But you want to understand that experience at the end of the day is a bigger part of this piece of this pie, and you want to pay attention to that. All right, so religionizing any textbook strategies and overthinking it and thinking it must be done this way and that, and if it's not done that way, you're gonna, well, a lot of people lose money doing exactly that. So you want to pay attention to that. So one of the top mistakes, number two mistakes you can make, is turning textbook strategies into religion. Again, remember, your emotions must be put in check. This is about maximizing profit at the end of the day. All right, next one, number three, value misidentification. Okay, so here's the deal. At the end of the day, you're buying, you're selling. You're buying, you're selling. This is a game of buying and selling. It's trading, basically, and it's real estate. Yes, the product is real estate. The services are attached to real estate. At the end of the day, you're buying and you're selling. So when you're buying, negotiations are going to be involved in that. When you're selling, negotiations are going to be involved in that. And because there are two different transactions and you're kind of in the middle, right? That can create conflict when it comes to where is your value? What is in it for you? What's in it for this person? What's in it for the seller or the buyer, right? And that can create all kind of confusion for you if you don't have any experience in this game. It's absolutely normal. But you gotta pay attention to this because your money, maximizing profit, is completely attached to this. So when you're negotiating with a buyer, right? What you're negotiating is different from what you're negotiating with a seller, right? The value in this is basically your ability to be able to add value onto this property once you acquire it from a seller. So when you're negotiating with a seller, you may find yourself in a position where you think the advantages you have on this end is going to be applicable here, but actually the advantages you have on this end has nothing to do with this end. As a matter of fact, your job at the end of the day is to maximize profit for everyone, both buyers and the seller. How do you do that? How do you make sure that this person doesn't get stuck with a property that's basically non-existent, not producing, not performing? How do you make sure, because you want to make sure you buy that property or secure a contract where it's realistic, there's gonna be a buyer ready to buy this property. Okay, let's say you're fixing and flipping, right? Obviously you're fixing and flipping, so you're gonna hold on to this property for a while. So that's even more important for you, because that period of time when you're gonna be holding this property and working on it, you wanna make sure that you're not running into trouble. There's other mistakes I'm gonna talk about that has to do with this, but the bottom line here is that you wanna make sure that you secure the best deal on this end, as long as it doesn't put the seller in trouble. If that means they're giving you the property for $0, then so be it, because holding onto a property costs money. So why do you think the cities are giving away properties for $100, $350, $300? Because at the end of the day, a property sitting down there and not producing means nothing to nobody. It's not producing. The idea is to get you to come in, take over this property for as low as you can, to help you put this property back to work, because that's the idea right there. So if you're too emotional and you're worried about, oh yeah, I could get value on this end, so let me just give the value to the seller, well, you're gonna lose a lot of money, because for all you know, there may be a reason why they're selling you very cheaply on this end, and it may has nothing to do with you. Maybe it has to do with the fact that they can't afford to hold on to this property any longer. That's what we call motivated sellers after all, right? So they may have personal reasons why they want to sell you lower than you think is nicer. It's not about being nice, it's about being profitable. All you do, it's a given that you have to be nice all the time. That's a given. However, you can be nice. You can nice your way all the way to being broke in the bank. And that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is make sure this person get what they want, right? And you walk away and you maximize profit on this end, because that profit, that extra $1 in profit can make all the difference for you on your next deal, on your next project, next year. You don't know what the market is gonna be, okay? And maybe you're gonna have an opportunity to give another extra dollar when it's time for charity, because again, there's a time for charity and there's a time for maximizing profit. When you're dealing with this game, it's about maximizing profit, okay? So don't go there and say, hey, because you know they're gonna give me the house for $10, let me just offer them $20 because I'm still making money anyway. You're making a big mistake, because for all you know, there may be a hidden reason why they're selling you very cheaply. If the numbers still work for you, run with it, because you may find that additional dollar useful later. So the point of what I'm saying here is, if you know that you have an advantage over here to pay $30,000 for a work that would normally take $70,000, don't try to transfer that value to your seller. It makes no sense, because you're gonna find surprises when you're holding onto the property. It's just part of the rehab game, a part of the fix and flip game. There are gonna be surprises. That's the bottom of the line. That's the bottom line, okay? There are gonna be surprises. So make sure that you're paying attention to that. Don't misappropriate value. Don't misidentify value. The value in this for you is your purpose. You're building this business because you wanna maximize profit. Don't misappropriate value. You wanna make sure you learn how to identify value in the right place. Identify value when it comes to your relationship with the seller. Separate that completely from identifying the value when you're dealing with the buyer. Because when you're dealing with the buyer, obviously you're trying to get as much money as possible within a certain range, because the bank is not gonna give money beyond the value of the property, right? So because of that, you wanna make sure you're paying attention to your ARV, after repair value, fair market value. If your neighborhood is shithole, then it is shithole. Don't worry about it. That's none of your business. Why is a shithole? It's none of your business. Just deal with the numbers and keep it moving. And you're gonna be in this business a lot longer, longer time. You're gonna make a lot less mistake. So, like I said, value misappropriation, misidentification is one of the top mistakes that I see newbies making. They say, oh yeah, that neighborhood is not that bad, but there's a house. It's only 1.1 mile beyond what I'm supposed to be looking at. Maybe I can use that value. No, you cannot use that value if it's beyond 1 mile radius from the subject property. You gotta stick with the numbers. Keep it simple. There are gonna be more than enough moments when you need to make decisions based on discretion, where there won't be enough data. Those moments are gonna come. Just leave everything else onto that moment. When you have data, use the data. Use the data, stick to the data, okay? All right, the fourth mistake I see people making, speaking of value, is speculating on ARV, right? So after repair value, what's the after repair value of a property? Basically, what you're looking for is a property within a 1 mile radius that was sold within the last 6 months that's comparable to the subject property, right? Don't go look at a single family and compare it to a half and half duplex, detached duplex. Don't do that. Don't go look at a single family house and compare it to a condo. Unless there's absolutely no other data, like there's no data like square footage per price, like there's no other data like other houses selling in the area, in that case you want to leave it to a professional appraiser to really appraise that property for you before you invest a single dime into that deal. If there's not enough data, that actually means you should stay away from it. There should be enough data in the area that you're dealing with. That's the most important thing I can tell you in all of this. If there's not enough data, what that means is that the market activity in that area is not enough for you to invest a single dime into that deal. Run, okay? So I see a lot of people speculating on ARV. The ARV is showing $30,000, but your mind is telling you, man, this property must be worth 70. If I push it to 80, and yet you are right now negotiating with the seller, right? If you're not negotiating with a buyer, why would you be negotiating or speculating on the numbers? When you're negotiating with a seller, you should be very skeptical on the numbers, because basically the idea is to buy as low as possible. When you're dealing with a buyer, basically you want to not speculative, but be optimistic that you're gonna get as much as possible. There could be, now you're looking for reasons to add on to the value of the property. However, maybe by putting work in or by showing some data that shows that the property may be worth more. But that's only applicable when you're dealing with a buyer. That's not applicable when you're dealing with a seller. Speculation should be completely out of the question. Use available data to your advantages. Because if you buy a property by speculating on the value, you're gonna have to deal with that speculated value when you're dealing with a buyer. Okay, or when you're dealing with a tenant, or when it's time for you to extract some kind of value, and all of a sudden you've milked all the juice before you purchase the property. You just want to make sure that you're paying attention. Remove speculation completely. That's why I don't worry too much if they say the market tanked tomorrow, the market went up tomorrow. I worried about that back in 2008. That was why my business crashed in 2008. But now I don't worry about that. The market can tank all at once because all I'm looking at is the present value. I'm looking at available data, and that data always transcends between 6 months windows of time. And sometimes that will eat me up a little bit if I'm in the wrong window, but it's okay because there's room for error. The idea is you want to have more than enough room for error. So one of the top mistakes that I see new rehabbers, new fix and flip investors making is they speculate too much on ARVs. Use the available data. Use the available data and use comparables that are comparable only to the subject property. Don't compare a big mansion to, because you're trying to inflate the number. And what I've seen people do is that they're actually inflating the number while they're dealing with the seller. Makes no sense, right? Because again, you want to buy as low as possible. You should be skeptical when you're dealing with the seller, and you should be optimistic when you already have the property and you're trying to sell. You're trying to maximize profit. That's the idea. Okay, so let's go on to the fifth. The fifth mistake I see people making is underestimating holding costs. Every time a deed is transferred to your name and or your LLC name, you're still responsible even if it's your LLC, right? Because you're, again, if you're a newbie, you're probably guaranteeing any loans or any activities with regard to the LLC, right? Make sure that you're not underestimating how much it's going to cost you for every second that property is on your name. These are facts, okay? That property is going to stay on your name for a while. So make sure you're not underestimating the holding cost. It's going to cost you money to maintain, repair, light, power, action, electricity, heat, right? All of those things are going to cost you money. Water, sewage, right? Vacancy factor, right? Those are things you have to pay attention to, and you have to overestimate more than anything else. If you either you're estimating or you're overestimating, never try not to underestimate, because most people do exactly that. A lot of people get into a deal and they don't factor in that property may hang in on their name for 2-3 sometimes a whole year, 2-3-4 months, sometimes a whole year, right? You want to make sure that you're paying attention to that. Don't underestimate holding costs. It costs money to own a property. That's why the cities are letting some of this property go for $100. Because if they give you that property for $100, money start coming in because it costs money to own a property. Okay? If a property costs $12,000 taxes per year, think about it. $12,000 in taxes, annual taxes, right? And they give you the property absolutely for free. That creates a $1,000 per month income for the city. Does that make sense now? So it costs money to hold on to a property, much less if the property is not even producing, meaning the property needs some work. There's no tenants. The property is not producing rental income right now. So you can't afford to hold on to a property that is not producing. Does that make sense? If the property is producing $2,000 per month and you have to give the city $1,000, then that's profit. It makes sense to own such property, right? But a lot of times the city is not going to give you a property that's producing $2,000 to get $1,000. What they're going to do is that the property is not producing anything. They want to give it to you. Hopefully you put that property back to work. You make it a performing asset, and then you start giving them some money back. And that's how the city makes money, from taxes. They don't make money from holding on to properties. They make money from taxes. So that's how that makes sense. Does that make sense? Yeah, it makes sense, right? So never underestimate holding costs. Is the top five. It's one of the top five mistakes that I see new rehabbers, new fix and flipper, you know, whatever you want to call it. That's one of the mistakes they're making. It costs money for every second. I don't care if it's $2 every second that it costs to hold on to that property. Make sure you're estimating property, possibly overestimating, okay? Sixth mistake that I see people making is commingling money. So I see people making, they may have a few projects going on, or obviously it doesn't have to be a real estate project. It could be another deal entirely that has nothing to do with real estate, their personal money, the college funds of their kids, and then they commingle the money. Let me tell you something. I'm speaking from experience, okay? And I'm just really digging myself out of the hole that I found myself. To be honest with you, I'm just being straight up honest with you. It's one of the easiest things to do in life, to commingle money, to mix money together, to mix one account with the other, to use Paul's money to pay Joe, to use Joe's money to pay Peter. Don't do that when you're doing real estate rehab. It's very easy to get in trouble because the property is gonna have its own challenges, okay? And if you ever find yourself having to do that, make sure every dime is accounted for. Money costs money. Every time you take money from the bank, it costs money. Every time you put money in the bank, it costs money. Every time money moves position, it costs money. As a matter of fact, if money remains in one position, it's still moving and it costs money. It's called inflation. So you can't afford to basically commingle money. You can't. You have to make sure that every dime is accounted for separately. If you have a property at 123 Jones Street, make sure that money has a bank account of its own and don't ever touch it, because you should be estimating every repair, every cost, everything anyway, and make sure that money stays alone and never touch it. Don't ever get tempted to touch it. You have to be very anal and religious about this. You have to be very, very, very religious about this, because it's very easy to get in trouble when you start mixing money together. You start with a dollar and then you get comfortable, you do $5, and then you put the money back and then you got comfortable. You say, hey, I'm a very disciplined person, you know, I'm a responsible person, I can handle this. Let me take $20 the next time. Next time, let me take $2,000. Before you know it, your property, your deal, your business is all in all kind of trouble. Well, I got this car payment I gotta make over here. Let me make the car payment, I'll put it back next week. Before you know it, it's all over the place, it's just all messy. Don't commingle money. It's one of the top mistakes I hear people making all the time. They mix money together, they don't separate the deals. Even sometimes, yes, you have a deal that kind of fell apart and you have to borrow money from other places. Make sure that money is documented, it's actually borrowed, and it's actually coming back with interest. Because every dime, when it moves, must pay for itself. It must be responsible. It must be on an errand to produce more. And that's how you keep your money. That's how you do this long term, okay? Let's go on to the seventh. Not breaking down the SOW to POW. What do I mean by that? SOW stands for scope of work. POW is pieces of work. So a lot of time you hire a contractor and they're gonna come and tell you, oh yeah, the work is gonna take 5 to 6 weeks. They tell you scope of work is blah, 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 and then they put a little one sheet piece of paper together. What is this? This is actually a project together, and that's all the scope of work that has to be done. But we have to break it down into pieces of work. And not only that, for every pieces of work, I need to see cost of labor, cost of material. I need to see how long that work is gonna take. I need those three pieces of data minimum. I need those three pieces of data minimum. Estimated cost of labor, cost of material, how long the work is going to take. And then after that, I need to plan the whole project. I'm not just going to take their words by it. So not breaking down the scope of work into pieces of work is one of the top mistakes that new rehabbers are making. They give them a one sheet of paper. We're going to rehab this out. They start breaking walls. And then I can't tell you how many times I come across houses that have broken down walls and they got stuck in the middle of the project, and or people that have to take money out of pocket from their day job to finish a job. In other words, there's no profit. Now they're gonna finish the project and then tell you they made $20,000, but the truth of the matter is that they did not account for the money they took from their personal savings to finish the work, and it's wrong. You know, that's not how to build wealth. You gotta account for every dollar, as I was saying earlier. So that's the seventh mistake that I see people making. The eighth mistake I see people making is not identifying estimated completion date of each POW, P-O-W, pieces of work, the piece of work. So for every piece of work on this sheet right here, right, there must be an estimated completion date. When is it expected to be completed? And you must factor that in the complete scope of work. You must basically check each one before you move on to the other one. If you're not doing that, you're supposed to say, oh yeah, that's transactional. Well, if you want to call that transactional, feel free to call it transactional. Transactional, transformational, leader, whatever you want to call it, just make sure There's only one rule that we must all obey in all of this. You must not lose money. Don't lose money. It's the rule number one that we all have to obey at the end of the day. And that's what I'm here to help you with when I list out these mistakes. It is absolutely true that you don't want to be micromanaging too much. That can be an overkill. That can become an overkill. But you also don't want to overlook certain things at the cost of $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a piece. You're not going to be in business for a long time if you keep doing that. So what all I'm saying is that keep a record of every piece of vanity, every piece of nail that has to go into a wall at the property, and just have that recorded. That way you can estimate how many nails was used and how much did that become at the end of 30 days, 60 days period of holding onto this property and making sure that we stay within the range of profit, right? So ninth mistake I see people making is underestimating the effect of psychology on the project. So for every time I'm talking like this and I'm all animated, there's an internal reason why I'm doing that. I'm passionate about this. You know, I've seen mistakes happen. When I'm talking to a contractor and I'm animated, there's a reason why I'm doing that from a psychological standpoint. And if you underestimate the power of psychology all across board, from interaction all the way across through the project, right? If you underestimate that, you will lose money. Why? Because those things has value on them, okay? And it will affect how you deal with the project, on how you check people, on how you hold people responsible, on how you check for the expected finish date and expected cost of labor and things like that, and the expectation of the project at large, right? It will affect everything. You have to give the honor, due respect to psychology when it comes to dealing with people, because you're gonna have to manage people. Either you're dealing with the general contractor or you're dealing with the handyman or plumber. Any one of these people are people. They're just human beings, and a lot of time they do things that's just being stupid, just being human, okay? And if you get too anal about that, you will overreact, and overreaction will always cost you much more money. So have utmost respect for the effect of psychology on the project at large, okay? Number 10. The 10th mistakes I see people making is underestimating the value of the location. So if I'm in Trenton, New Jersey, or I'm in Newark, New Jersey, respect the location. The house by itself or the street by itself does not create the value of the property. The location within 1 mile radius create the value of the property. This is kind of connected to the ARV that I mentioned earlier. Okay, it's the same thing, but kind of different. Okay, I see a lot of people say, oh yeah, but if the property is within 1 mile radius, but it's in Maplewood, it's just a few blocks from my house, which is in Irvington. Don't do that. You know why you shouldn't do that? Because when your buyer come to the table and they're ready to buy and they use that against you, they have the power. They got the money. Your money is in their hands, and if they use that to walk away, you just lost money. So it's in your best interest when you're, again, negotiating a deal with a seller to use that so that you don't have to deal with that. You must have more than enough room so that in case somebody used that against you, you can still sell the house and be in profit. You lost $2,000. It's okay. It's not really a loss because you still made $18,000, right? But if you bargain like that with your seller, you're going to have to deal with that on the buyer's end. Does that make sense? So basically what I'm trying to tell you is that respect the location, because real estate is all about location, location, location. If the location is worth $19,000, that's what it's worth. Don't inflate the numbers, okay? Let the market inflate the numbers for you. The market is always right. Sometimes the market will come in, a few people come in and they say, you know what, I want that house. You did such a great job. I want the house. The market is right. And the market will inflate the numbers for you, and then the market will always be right. You will always be wrong as compared to the market. The market gets to determine the value of the property. That's why I said stick with the numbers. Stick with the available data. If there's no enough data, run from that deal. Make sure that the deals you're doing have enough data to justify the money you're investing or other people's money that you're investing. Because it's not your money does not mean you should invest stupidly. Pay attention. Respect the location. Respect the value that the location is saying. That's what my value is. I am Trenton. Oh, well, I'm not Trenton. I'm Beverly Hills. Respect the location when it comes to value. Don't underestimate the value of the location because the street is hot. Because there's one house next door that sold very hot. Don't do that. Okay? All right. So 11th mistake I see people making is not partnering with and leveraging experience. I can't tell you, the best source of education ever is experience. You know, it's just what it is, you know. Anyone will tell you, in any culture in the world, experience is always the best teacher, you know. It's just what it is. And I wish I can explain that a little bit further. Maybe I can drive that home a little bit more. There's just some things you discover while you're at this game and you're doing this game every day. There's some things you discover that you can't necessarily put into words. We try our best to put things into books to help guide, you know, but when it comes down to it, you're gonna need, that's the reason why you need mentors and things like that, because they can see some troubles miles away that may be harder to kind of put into words, into a textbook, or they didn't get to it yet, or whatever, you know. Yes, you can gain a lot of knowledge by reading books, watching YouTube videos, all of this, right? But try to partner and leverage experience, okay? And that means find people with experience and find a way to leverage their experience. And obviously, if you're gonna do that, make sure you're bringing something to the table, because if you're just gonna go there to milk value, they're gonna shy away from working with you, because they don't want to waste their time, right? So it's very important that you partner with and you leverage experience, no matter how small it is. Pay attention to experience. If somebody is speaking from experience, ask more questions. If you have to ask more questions, if you ask too many questions, they may check out and ignore you. Yes, that happens, but just make sure you're always bringing something to the table, and then ask more questions, and then you'll find that as time goes on, you too, you will get burnt a little bit. You know, it's kind of like you tell a child not to touch the fire, right? And then they're not gonna listen a lot of time, and I respect that, because they haven't experienced how hurtful it can be to get burnt by fire, right? But if they touch that bulb and it hurts, and then next time they know, and sometimes that experience right there is what helps them. And some people will tell you certain things from experience. They say, you know, for example, I was just reminded just yesterday, don't call the city first. Clean up the house first, make sure the house look good first, then call the city. And there's a lot of stuff you can get away with. And yes, safety first, right? That you would not necessarily get away with if you call the city first. You know, that works against conventional knowledge. Call the city first, do everything right, right? But the question is that, what is right? How do you define right, you know? Well, to me, safety first is right, then secondly, maximizing profit so I can stay in business is right. And, you know, I can order it depending on my moral values, right? And that may be different from yours, but at the end of the day, we're all trying to make profit. So pay attention to experience is really the point of what I'm saying here. The last but not least is not leveraging wholesaling. I can't tell you, you know, a lot of people will say, I'm just an investor, I'm not a wholesaler. I personally don't know what that means, okay? Because at the end of the day, as an entrepreneur, you're a marketer, okay? So if you're marketing enough, then you'll be generating leads that you don't necessarily have enough room or bandwidth to do. And you can flip that deal for additional $5,000, $7,000, $2,000, and that can make all the difference at the end of the year for you on how far you've gone when it comes to revenue. At the end of the day, your primary goal, your primary job is to maximize revenue, maximize profit, right? So if you're gonna generate leads anyway, why not wholesale some of those leads to other people? Why not create a whole operation, sub-operation from that and wholesale, right? You're gonna be a marketer anyway, because you're gonna market these houses once it's done anyway. And you need marketing knowledge and wisdom, even though I know you're working with a realtor, right? But you can still help them, because most realtors don't know what they do when it comes to marketing. But if you have some of this knowledge, then you can put that to work and help you maximize profit, maximize revenue, but also help you improve the people around you, like the realtors, like the lawyers, like the attorneys, the title agents. All those people will love to work with you more. They learn more from you. And now your challenges become a whole brand new challenge, which is to find smarter people to hang around, right? Because you don't want to be the smartest person in the room, right? So those are the 12 top mistakes right there. Hopefully this was extremely valuable for you. If you haven't downloaded the book, it's smartrealestatewholesaling.com for free. And yes, look out for, if you download the book, you'll be also be notified once Real Estate Money Secrets comes out. It's taking me a little bit longer because I have quite a few things on my plate. And like I said earlier, you know, we're going to 2019 is going to be hefty crazy. Those 12 mistakes are basically the mistakes you should avoid. and make it a part of this. You probably can't find them in a textbook somewhere, and some recent experiences told me I had to put this together to help you. Hopefully it was valuable for you. Hopefully you've been enlightened and educated, and I will see you on the next one. Click like, share, and comment your questions below. I'll see you on the next one, and peace.